Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all.
A mistreated record playing a song about mistreatment going on behind closed doors. Male violence against many women and children continue on a daily basis worldwide. My questioning this inhuman act led me to interview two women who assist battered and homeless women in Toronto, Ontario.
3 to 4 women in Ontario every month get killed in the context of domestic violence.
A lot of men just don't even recognize that violence against women exists.
Rita Godley.
I'm the executive director of Women in Transition. We operate 2 shelters, one primarily for assaulted women and children, and the second one for single homeless women who have a chronic history of both intimate violence, early childhood violence, and institutional violence.
Elizabeth Bateman, my position is that I'm the chair of the community-based board of directors at Women in Transition. I don't believe women are born looking to be beaten. All these are some of the most pernicious and vicious parts of the myth. When you have a culture that has now taken S&M eroticism, which are forms of subordination and sexual practice, to a level at which it's a commodity, a trend, who identifies who's seeking what and in whose interest is this idea being promoted? Some people out there promoting now that it is a gendered aggression that men are born with and that it's in their DNA and it cannot be changed. Men really are hunters and killers, and we better just understand that they can't control that socially. So there's really critical thought that needs to come in at the point at which these pop cult or mass sort of phenomenon of speaking to gendered violence as some scientific discovery that, oh gee, it's genetic, or oh gee. No, it is a social phenomenon, and it's sanctioned in a society, your society, our society.
In the United States and now in Canada, we have turned to the battered woman syndrome.
Author Ann Jones.
The battered woman syndrome is described as a condition of learned helplessness that a woman falls into through having been exposed to a cycle of violence over a prolonged period of time. And the chief implication is that this woman was not reasonable, that she's suffering from this mental defect called battered woman syndrome. Now, as long as the court can believe this scenario, that women kill because of a mental aberration, then the law does not have to examine the long and persistent pattern of male violence against women. And that's what it's trying to avoid.
I believe it costs Canadians about $4 billion.
Rita Godley.
To assist assaulted women and children in terms of education, school, health, and what have you. If we put in the proper supports, I'm sure that it will not only improve the human rights of women and children globally, as well as in the Canadian context, it would improve the quality of life.
You may have a religious belief of equality and whatever. I certainly experienced notions embedded within Catholic theology as fundamentally anti-women, and not only anti-women, but certainly condoned and somehow tacitly endorsed violence and control of women, because women were the source of all evil in that theology. So it is very deeply embedded. There is a very deeply embedded universal consciousness at this point that men control and manipulate to maintain sort of global mastery, for lack of a better word, over women and children as their property, their right, their resource, whether it's plow the field or plow the woman. Here in certainly Western legal tradition, there was a rule that's called the rule of thumb, and it was in law that you could beat your wife with a stick that was no thicker than your thumb. So it's not just the sort of cultural image, it's an institutional practice.
That it's institutionalized, so it's subliminal. It is this unmasking of dominance that becomes very difficult for the people who are on the dominant side. How do you benefit from it? How do you collude with it on a daily basis? How are you going to become an ally in the struggle? And how are you not going to take over by not perpetuating the very things that we want to change?
I think one thing men have to do is look at the whole concept or cultural belief system of masculinity that they've been given and what constitutes the virile masculine. And for men, it's very easy to pick up on the embedded notions of virility and masculinity, that by definition, masculinity derives its essence from the subordination of women.
Elizabeth, I've oftentimes heard that some women are attracted to aggressive men. What about those women?
Now we're getting into really a critical level of discussing the cultural mythologies. If a young girl or a young boy are in a family where they see mom and dad engaged in a wife-battering behavior, they are likely to find themselves in relationships as they become young adults that reproduce that kind of behavior. Certainly how it would play out in the differentiation between the genders, i.e. the young girls then find themselves subordinating themselves to aggressive males, the males then find themselves asserting themselves as aggressive males and seeking out subordinate women. We know that there's an intergenerational violence.
Yes, it's very fundamental. We see it in the shelter all the time as the woman goes through her own change process. They have normalized the violence. So when we say, you don't deserve to be hit, and she does a take that she's being recognized as a person, as an individual, a female.
One of the most dangerous times for a woman with respect to the level and ferocity of violence is when she makes the decision to leave.
History on this apartment regarding domestic assaulting her. There are children in the apartment. She has been injured but is refusing ambulance at this time. Be advised also this male does have a criminal record with the police. Has been drinking. She's extremely hysterical. 5101, 5102 advisory ambulance.
You're listening to an interview concerning battered and homeless women. Elizabeth Bateman continues.
They have global positioning systems where they can locate anybody on this planet, but they can't make a woman leaving her husband safe. Why is that?
In this current political climate, it is burdensome because women don't have recourses to the supports so they can get out of it. Because you cannot say to the woman, you will get housing. She says, well, I've been abused, but I can't prove that I lived with the man. They must live a certain length of time. I haven't ever been able to get a clear picture from a policymakers, whether it's 3 months or 6 months, that you must have had experience abuse before your relationship can be called a legitimate relationship. Because if you left within 2 days, it wouldn't be considered as a long enough relationship to merit the benefits of the special priority program. She's punished for that because she won't qualify. So that means she has to go in the private market for housing.
If you look at the situation in Ontario, one of the things that Rudy is speaking to is the current government we have under Mike Harris. the private market now is a free market as well. They abolished rent control. So a woman may get out in the free market tenancy road there, but there's nothing that's affordable because landlords can jack it up to whatever the market will give them. And so it brings up a lot of different kinds of questions about where the social values are really on this issue.
It really puts the women and children in jeopardy and compromises our stance of we are going to assist you. It sets up the services, it sets up the women and children because they're fighting for their lives against the greatest odds and they're doomed if they don't step out of that environment and they're doomed if they do. And what we see in the shelters is a lot of the women returning home.
How do you as an individual in this society respond if you see incidents of male violence against women? One of the things that comes to mind for me is right next door to me for a number of years, there was a young woman, young mother, she had two young kids living with her partner who was very violent. And I would regularly hear, you know, the violence going on next door. I'd hear her screams. I'd hear her crying. I would be talking to her over the fence when she had an opportunity. I said, look, I know, because I can hear that he hits you. Her response was, well, yeah, but I provoke him. So I engaged her in a dialogue about it whenever I could, just because one of the things we've learned is how do you intervene in a more knowing way? This isn't stranger to stranger, whether it's your sister, your aunt. One of the things is it's important to give women the signal they can talk about it. Many women are just silenced from the get-go to even say it's going on. So if you say, is this what's going on? They may deny it, but that you've given the signal that you give them permission to come back to you and acknowledge it's going on. That's number one. Number two, I think an important thing to realize is that that woman is going to pay the consequence of any contact about what's going on. One, because the men who are abusive are very controlling. Quite often the other way that women are controlled in it is that they're isolated. One of the features we look for in looking for abuse is how isolated are you? Is the woman next door cut off from talking to you? Do you find she doesn't talk to her family anymore? Whatever. It's intervention and acknowledging and being aware that this situation is going on, giving the woman permission to speak to it, being non-judgmental. It's not like, oh, gee, how come you're still there getting beat up every day? It is acknowledging that she has reasons. Women have reasons why they're staying. There's nowhere else to go. Whatever emotional confusion they may feel about the interests of the child being tied up with their dad, they're real reasons. So it's important that you intervene non-judgmentally and just say, is this going on? If it is, you know, I can give you a number. So you signal support. A lot of interventions, I think, fail because they set the woman up in a way that they can't follow through to give her any real support. So the important thing is to realize you don't want to set somebody up because Mr. right there may find out and she's going to pay the price. He's not going to let her get away with talking about it. It's blowing his cover. So you got to realize and respect when any woman speaks to it, she is taking a risk to tell you that it's going on. She's at risk to even talk about it.
In terms of interventions, I think people have to use their judgment because we are quite aware that if you intervene in a full-blown crisis, there is a potential of you also getting hurt. And so it is good to organize or mobilize a couple of people rather than going singly, right? Sometimes it can sort of disarm the person, and you don't know. So it's better to make a noise, what's going on, you know, it's not okay, I'm going to call the police, giving a sensibility that there's somebody else involved, calling out to your roommate and saying, come on, let's get out there on the street, drawing the attention of people on the street, saying something is going on, let's do something about it. Even for police, who have improved to a marked degree, intervening, is that police get hurt in those interventions. It's very critical that your intervention not be controlled by the fact also that, oh, well, the woman will pay. The man who's going to abuse is going to abuse regardless.
One place that I think, if we're talking about an intervention, is I've seen this in groups with men, because men value male approval. They don't necessarily value female approval. So I have seen where a man has sort of jumped in and said, hey, buddy, what are you doing here? You know, men don't beat up on women. That had an immediate impact. Having some woman say it might not have. But I think men, if they commit to saying they do not accept a world where men can control and beat up on women, then when you see it with another male, you can. Or even talk to people who talk about it. Men sit and talk to each other. Oh, yeah, I slapped the old lady the other night. Why don't they just turn to each other and say, you what? You did what? Question each other about it.
Any man can change his behavior.
Ann Jones.
Men who use violence choose violence. And they can just as easily choose not to be violent. The problem is that the courts have never confronted them, the criminal justice system has never confronted them, and for the most part, nonviolent men have not confronted the violent men in our midst. So it's been left to women to do that single-handedly.
What society do you want to create for your sons, your uncles, your brothers? And is it one in which that kind of behavior is given permission under the name of masculinity?
If you see somebody sexually harassing or leering or joking in the workplace or in the pub, you say, stop it. If you see, you know, most of the pubs and bars nowadays have those big TVs where all kinds of male violence is perpetuated in the imageries that they portray, is to say, turn it off. Don't use these expressions, boys will be boys.
Huh? Boys don't cry.
Right. Those kind of things, to actively pay attention to it and also to change the coding in it.
One thing men could do is listen to the women around you. Unblock your ears and listen and ask the question. Key questions to ask. The first one is, do you trust me enough to talk about this with me? Are you willing to talk about your experience? And women will tell you. And then acknowledge, listen to it. Don't feel that you have to have an opinion laid over. Don't feel that you need to advise her what she could have done better. Just listen. Once you open your eyes, you will see examples of violence against women every single day. Now, within that, you can choose your moment to address it. But there's other ways you can be addressing it which isn't in the immediacy of somebody else's confrontation on it. You can be writing letters, let's say. There are activist positions to take. You can go out and mobilize support for the women's shelter. You can do childcare so women can go and hear about this issue. You can do X, Y, and Z. You can do whatever your creative mind can turn to. You can offer technical skills that a lot of women aren't even given the privilege to learn, to be given to women as they move out of those situations. There's 1,000 creative ways that men can position themselves as allies in the struggle to eliminate violence. And it may not be in exactly addressing the violence, but bettering the situation of a young boy or a young girl moving out of the violence. There's subtle thousands of ways.
It's using your privilege to advance equality issues for women and children.
In a sense, all men benefit from the violence of those men who are violent against women, because those batterers and rapists help to keep all women in their place. In the same way that all white people benefit from racism, even though not all white people are racists. But on the other hand, just as all white people suffer from the effects of racism in our society, men suffer too. Nonviolent men suffer too from what violent men have done to the relations between the sexes. They've lost the friendship of women. And the only way they're going to get it back is to be part of the solution to the problem of male violence, to confront violent men and get them to change their behavior.
Author Anne Jones, you have been listening to an interview with Rita Godley and Elizabeth Bateman. They assist battered and homeless women in Toronto, Ontario. Author Anne Jones's comments were from the film When Women Kill, directed by Barbara Doran of Morag Production and co-produced with the National Film Board of Canada. Tracy Chapman sang Behind the Wall. The pianist was Ursule Mercier. Technical assistance was from Thomas Ungalida. I'm Noel Thomas. Thank you for listening.